You're listening
to the CD Baby.
CD Baby.
CD Baby.
DIY.
Musician.
Musician. Podcast.
Hey there, and welcome to episode number 98 of the CD Baby DIY Musician Podcast. My name is Kevin Bruner, your host for the show, and I want to remind you that our 100th episode is quickly approaching. Some of you have already called our listener line with some pretty cool shout-outs to the show, some from stage even, and we'll be playing those very soon. There's still time to get your calls in. Our listener line is 206-426-5683. Well, on to this episode. You're going to hear from Brian Meese, one of the founders of the fan funding site Rocket Hub, rockethub.com. I know fan funding has become a popular idea lately, with many artists taking a stab at it. We've talked a little bit about it on the podcast, but a couple weeks ago, I had a conversation with Brian, and he had so much detail about how to put together a successful fan-funded campaign that I knew I had to have him on the podcast. He even inspired me to try a fan-funded campaign for my band's upcoming release. We go pretty in-depth in this interview, but I think it's important information for you to know, because if you're trying a fan-funded campaign and don't know what you're doing, you can really hurt the relationship with your fan base. Even if you're not planning on trying a fan-funded campaign, much of the conversation can be applied to your regular fan outreach. Well, let's get to my interview with Brian. Well, joining me on the phone is Brian Meese of Rocket Hub. Brian, how you doing?
I'm doing very well. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, it's good to have you. And it's funny that you and I were having a conversation a couple weeks ago about crowdfunding and Rocket Hub. And about halfway through, I realized I should have been recording this. This would have been a great podcast, because we really got into details about using crowdfunding in an effective way, which there's been a lot of talk about crowdfunding, but not a lot of talk about how to really do it well. So before we get to all those details, why don't you tell us about Rocket Hub, how you guys got started, and maybe how you might be different from some of the other crowdfunding sites that are out there.
Sure. So, you know, my background primarily was as a singer-songwriter and an indie filmmaker. And so, you know, we kind of backed into this as creatives. Both of my partners are also creative cats. One's a writer and the other one is an actor. So we kind of have this creative background coming into to our business endeavor. And we started to notice that a lot of folks were unable to make projects based on the lack of funds. We also started to see some things kind of happening in the world of crowdfunding. You know, there was some early models like Celeband that were intriguing to us. And so we started following what was happening in this segment and decided that we wanted to launch a platform that was by creatives for creatives, that was global, that will allow for, you know, any project that's legal and in good taste, and a place where folks can learn about how to crowdfund their project. So that's really how Rocket Hub came about. We're a truly indie company. We don't have any corporate backing or VC backing. And our mission is to kind of help folks from around the world get their projects off the ground.
So what are some of the basic features that you offer an artist that's looking to crowdfund their project?
Well, we offer the platform, which gives artists the credibility to, you know, run their own campaigns. But we also really are big on the educational component. And we have a sister site called rockethub.org, O-R-G, where folks can kind of learn a little bit about how to properly crowdfund their projects. There's still a lot of myths revolving around crowdfunding. And you know, I just presented a couple of weeks ago at the New Music Seminar the Crowdfunding Manifesto. And in the Crowdfunding Manifesto, we address kind of the three pillars that really make for a successful project. And pillar number one is a cool project. It kind of sounds like a no-brainer, but, you know, it really needs to be a buzzworthy, intriguing, fascinating project. Something, you know, like a new album with a cool spin that's made with, you know, with producers and, you know, musicians that you're really excited about. Or maybe it's a tour, or maybe it's an event, a residency, a show, something that's, you know, something that's really exciting for folks. So the pillar number one, if you will, is a cool project, and it's spearheaded by a person, an interesting person, an artist usually, or maybe a team of artists. But it's very important for those folks to be on the forefront of the project. You know, companies couldn't really crowdfund. It's not the same because, you know, fans want to have that interaction and that impact on an individual or a team of, you know, team of individuals. So pillar number one, cool project spearheaded by interesting, accessible artists or team of artists. Pillar number two, which we also talked about the new music seminar, is really the network of folks that you have access to. And a lot of folks are so concerned, a lot of my musician friends are so concerned about getting new fans that they kind of neglect the ones they already have. And the cool thing about a crowdfunding campaign is that it's a great excuse to really galvanize your existing fan base. Mm-hmm. And with that galvanized fan base, that's actually the easiest way to build new fans, because those folks kind of, you know, you remind them of what you're doing and why you're doing it, and they become kind of sounding boards for your project and for your campaign. And oftentimes some really cool things happen. You know, bloggers take note, press takes note, and there's an awareness that kind of comes out of the campaign when folks, you know, get involved. So the network is kind of a key element at. And a lot of folks will say, well, I've got so many friends on MySpace or Facebook. And, you know, that's great. I kind of look at the overall width as one dimension of the network, width just being the kind of the total number of people you're connected to. Mm-hmm. But I also like to encourage artists to look and cultivate depth in their network, you know, really address the context of how you know these folks. I mean, an example of somebody that's deep in your network would be somebody that's known you for a long time and really loves what you're doing and believes in what you're doing. The diehard that's at every show, the one that bootlegs the show, or the guy that comes out with, you know, his own little fanzines or whatever it is that's kind of, you know, however they showcase their desire to be a part of what the artist is doing. But look for the depth in a network, and look to kind of build that depth. Mm-hmm. And oftentimes, smaller projects especially can get made with networks that aren't all that huge. You know, it doesn't have to be 1,000 true fans. Sometimes it could be just 100, or sometimes just 10 if the network is deep enough and those folks want to see something happen. So that's kind of the second, you know, leg of a crowdfunding campaign, is that network and how you're communicating with them, and how you're, you know, asking for them to kind of join the journey of this crowdfunding campaign that you're working on. Mm-hmm. And then the third thing really is the rewards, what you offer back in exchange for financial contributions. Because a lot of folks still don't get this right. They look at it as a donation model, or they look at it as an investment. And really those two words aren't accurate. It's a true exchange if it's done right. And it should feel like an exchange as well. So it should be, you know, priced fair. It should be priced enticing, you know, those rewards that folks get back. And when that's done well, the rewards are a great place to build brand as an artist. They're a great place to offer multiple levels of impact in terms of pricing and goods and experiences. So it could be a really powerful thing when the rewards menu is put together well. You know, it should read kind of like a menu at a fine restaurant, where it's thematic and fun to read. Even if the person picks like the $20 or the $10 reward, they can kind of look through these other things that you offer and learn a little bit about the artist. For me, as an example, I crowdfunded my own record with Rocket Hub, and I had like $10, you got the CD. Well, that's great. $20, you got the CD and a haiku poem. And guess which one sold 4-1?
The 20, I know the answer already because I talked to you before.
So my point is, like, the financial return on the high coupon is, it's double, I mean, double the price. I would never have thought that going into this, but folks paid double the price for the high coupon because they want a little piece of that authentic, you know, that authentic stuff that you can't buy in a retail experience. So my $20 level, which was the signed CD and the high coupon, outsold the regular CD, you know, 4-to-1, and then at $50, you could actually be, your image could be on the record. So we would Sergeant Pepper you for $50, and we had a fair amount of folks take it too.
Yeah.
Then $100, you get an ukulele lesson with yours truly. $250, and you get a surfing lesson, and I had a taker for that, believe it or not. And then I had a couple of custom songs that folks bought at the $600 level. I've written some tunes for my brother's kids, and some of my friends that have been following me for a while are like, wow, I'd really like to have that for my kids. So I had a couple of those move. So it doesn't take many of those higher impact players to really make a dent on raising funds. I mean, I used to spend thousands of dollars to go into the studio, then spend thousands of dollars to duplicate my CDs, and then at the end of the day, I'd have a product that I would sell for $10 if I was lucky, or often I would just give away mm-hmm. folks because it was kind of awkward to ask people, you know, your good friends for money or whatever. But with a platform like this, you really have the credibility and the infrastructure needed to, you know, reach out to your entire network and see, you know, where they want to play with you, really.
All those three pillars, I was looking at my questions, and most of my questions fall within each of those three main pillars. But something you just mentioned there about feeling kind of like awkward asking friends and family, basically your really diehard supporters usually, to buy the album, and is kind of a nice benefit to crowdfunding this way, because that way they get excited about it. They want to help you. They want to be a part, and it puts more of a plan in place. So it's not just
sure.
like going back to your, you know, your friends and saying, hey, buy my album, and feeling awkward
right.
for asking. Where this, they feel like they're really supporting you because they want to support you. And it's just,
they want, yeah, it's a much more fair exchange, really. You're offering them the opportunity to have an impact on whether or not something happens, A, and B, depending on where they kind of fall in a different, you know, level, they can determine how much of, you know, a part of the project they really want to be, which is really exciting from a fan standpoint. I mean, you know, it's a whole new way of engaging with an artist. I mean, we're kind of used to being artists and like having friends that are artists, but a lot of folks, you know, having access to us is really exciting. And by offering these different levels of engagement, I was shocked when I ran my campaign because, you know, I thought, oh, everyone's going to want to buy the $5 MP3s, the $10 CD, and those were my least popular sellers.
Mm-hmm.
I had, you know, several many $50 levels, lots of $100 levels, a $250 and a couple of $600s. So it didn't take a whole heck of a lot to get to my, you know, goal of $5,000, and I blew through it and was shocked, frankly. I mean, I knew I had a, you know, some friends and fans, but I didn't really think of myself as even quite a mid-level artist yet. But whenever I hit that number, I was like, wow, this is really exciting. And I realized the power of offering the different price points, because
yeah.
a lot of those folks would buy from me, but they'd buy a $10 CD. So I've got, you know, 80 or 90 people buying a $10 CD. It's very different from, you know, offering them different price points that range from five to thousands of dollars, and having them pick where they want to kind of play in the project.
Yeah.
A lot more exciting for them too.
Yeah. Well, I know that a lot, you know, the idea of crowdfunding has been kind of a popular buzzword lately, but going with your pillar number one, I mean, I've been thinking about, you know, with my band Hello Morning doing this for a while as we're getting
yeah.
ready to do an album. But I think one of the first roadblocks a lot of artists hit is like, okay, how do I, especially musicians, how do I
right.
shape my project or my campaign so that it is a cool project or has that appeal? It's not just like, hey, my new album, sponsor me,
yep.
you know?
It, yep.
And so I think that's the main first roadblock people hit. Because we've had, you know, last year we interviewed an artist, Allison Weiss, who had a lot of success on it. And we didn't really spend as much time talking about how she formulated the campaign. And it's crowdfunding's come away since then as well. But I think that's the first roadblock we hit is that, okay, I want to do it, but, you know, how do I make this appealing to people? What are some of the things that you've seen artists do that's been a way of taking just, you know, what for us is, seems like a normal thing, making an album, but make it seem more appealing to the people that might be offering support?
Great question. I would say as quickly as possible to find out why you're making this record or why you're doing this project. Because once you can resonate why the project is important to you, it's very easy for your fan base to pick it up and figure out why it's important to them. For example, like I kind of went into this, and I know a lot more now after crowdfunding my own record, which is why I'm excited to kind of share this with your listeners here. But like I didn't really realize a lot of this stuff when I was doing it, so I'm kind of, you know, debriefing with you now in hopes of that I could pass this knowledge on. But what my campaign became about was really a guy that's still, you know, still making music, still pounding the pavement. I still do shows on a regular basis. I'm, you know, in my mid-30s, I'm married, you know, I've got real responsibilities with a real company, but I haven't given up on the thing that I really love to do, which is to make music. And a lot of my fans and friends really resonated with kind of that undercurrent of a mission, which I didn't really necessarily punch up, but it started to become apparent in the conversations revolving around my project. For example, dude, I remember you in the Senior Talent Show. I can't believe you're still, you know, writing songs and making records. This is awesome. I'm an accountant with 5 kids. Here's $50. Mm-hmm. I want to know everything that's going on with your project. You know, and I had friends from college, kind of the same thing, friends from grad school, people that are just kind of watching what you're doing and getting really excited again about it. That really kind of, unbeknownst to me, was really the undercurrent of the project, which was, I'm still doing this. I'm still at it. I'm still pounding the pavement. Sometimes my shows are packed. Sometimes there's 3 people there, but I'm still doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And that really resonated with my network. So they crawled out of the woodwork to like make, you know, this, you know, underdog guy, which was me, fun. You know, I had a lot of really overwhelmingly powerful, positive response. Like, hey man, keep doing it. Cause I even kind of put in the jokingly in the project description, like, yeah, if I don't hit this, you know, I guess I'm kind of done. You know? So that was pretty
going
smart
for sympathy
of me to put in there. Yeah, well, I mean, it's like you learn about, you know, your fan base too. I mean, you learn a lot about kind of where you are in the creative track, with the crowdfunding campaign. So it's a great way of kind of, you know, gauging kind of where you are. But that was kind of, I would say, to answer your question, figure out why it's important and figure out really why the world should care, because a lot of records are coming out, a lot of songs are being written. I mean, frankly, you know, the world is not waiting for another amazing song. I mean, I love a great song as much as the next person. I mean, I'm a songwriter and I love and appreciate the craft and art of it. In addition to that, you know, you really have to tell people why it's important. And when you do it right, it becomes really, really powerful.
Well, I think, you know, that's probably the key to the whole idea of crowdfunding to begin with, because you got to be able to communicate to your audience part of yourself. And if you can't do that, you're going to have a hard time getting people to connect with what you're doing. And, you know, that's why you mentioned before that it typically doesn't go over too well when a company tries to do it. And I've seen, you know, certain like small companies do various crowdfunding projects, but it's not necessarily what people are looking for, that connection that they feel like they are making a difference with you and your project.
Exactly right.
And
it's very personal, intimate, authentic, you know, one-on-one type of connection, really. Another thing I talked about at the New Music Seminar that got a little bit of buzz on Twitter or whatever was I said this is not really a new idea. I mean, it's really a new spin on a very old idea. And I said Beethoven plus social media equals crowdfunding. And then I let everybody kind of take that in for a second. And then I elaborated, which was really, you know, back in Beethoven's day, there was no record business.
Mm-hmm.
And how did he pay the bills? He relied on a handful of wealthy patrons to, like, you know, commission work or, you know, for him to kind of pay the bills. And he was still writing stuff for you know, wealthy families, royalty and those types of types of people. But in a modern era, an artist can kind of go with a micro-patronage with that exchange element and leverage their social media, leverage their connectivity, and basically do kind of the same thing, which is in exchange for financial contributions, give something back.
Yep, and I think it's kind of the cool progression that where things have kind of come full circle, where you know the people get more involved with the creation of art. The non-art community gets more involved with its creation, where they'll care more, because I think that's one of the things I think that's been the detriment to the huge music business that came out of the 20th century, is that there was such a separation from the creation of music and the average person, that it just became this machine that they don't care about. And now it's kind of returning back to where the people are going to want to actually care and support artists, and this is one of the ways they can do it.
You took the words right out of my mouth.
We could talk more on that subject, but let's move on to you'd mentioned, having a network of folks that you have access to. And this is one of the things that when you and I talked earlier or previously, that we kind of talked about how big of an email list or fan base should you have before you even try to attempt this. And your answer kind of surprised me, because You made it sound it was like it was easier than it probably is, but you actually gave me some inspiration to actually try it myself, because it seemed like it wasn't that you had to have an email list of thousands and thousands.
Yeah, I want to be careful, because I don't want to make it sound easy, because it's definitely a big strategy, and you have to be very thoughtful in communication. Anything worthwhile, as we know, isn't easy. But if you're strategic and you do a little bit of homework, and if you feel free to check out, rockethub.org, and you can learn, kind of some really kind of cool in a nutshell type of ideas on how to crowdfund. But, it's a pretty powerful way to harness your existing network. And depending on kind of where you are in your creative track, I mean, granted, maybe not everybody could crowdfund $5,000 or $10,000, but a lot of folks could, hit $500, $1,000, a couple $1,000 if they have a track record, if they have trust built up in their network, because really that trust is such a key component. And once, your first followers and kind of your inner circle gets involved on the project, they send those trust signals out to the folks that are a little bit wider in your network, the folks that are on your newsletters and, following you on Twitter, so you can send them over. And they can see, oh, okay, there's something happening here. There's money going into this project. There's conversation, around this project. This is cool, and it looks like something I want to be a part of. A little bit of social proof kind of things cooking there, because nobody wants to be the first one. No one wants to be the first one on the dance floor, but once a couple people go out there, next thing you know, it's completely crowded kind of a thing.
Yeah.
And so you have to be strategic in it, but with a little bit of strategy and a little bit of support, I see this as being a very powerful model, no matter where you are in your career. I mean, we've had folks do small projects, $300, $500, $600, do like a little, stamp up some EPs or have a little release party. Or maybe it's $1,000 to, have some kind of event or to help contribute to the record that's already happening. So there's a lot of ways to use crowdfunding, but you just have to kind of, do a good job of gauging where you are in terms of, your list and how connected you are. And I like this. I say, don't look at just the overall number, but look at the depth. I mean, how excited are these people that are in your list? How excited are these people that are following you on Twitter or that are your Facebook or MySpace friends? How really engaged are they with you?
Mm-hmm.
And, I'm constantly surprised. We've got projects on Rocket Hub now, with folks that really undershot, they're like, oh, I can never get to $1,500, and they get do it in like a few days. And then you have folks that are like, oh, I've been on tour and I've done this and I've done this, I can easily hit, $5,000 or $10,000, and they really struggle. Some of them hit it and some of them don't. So it can be a pretty solid reality check on kind of where you are, but a little bit of strategy heading into it, I feel like folks can learn, and we really want Rocket Hub to be that learning resource for artists, musicians, and creatives.
Yeah, well, let's talk a little bit about properly setting a goal based on what you think you can do. You had mentioned that you had seen projects that have a decent, you know, fan base and at a certain level easily hit 500 and 1500. When I say easily, I mean, you know, they're out there working it. That's assumed from, you know, the beginning of this conversation.
Correct.
It's somebody who's doing it right, not somebody who just slaps up a project, posts on Facebook once. What's kind of like some real things to consider as far as like hitting the financial goal, or have you seen some standard goal amounts that seem to do well, or do you have any insight on that? Because I know that's one of the first things after getting past how to approach it in the first place. That's the next hurdle people hit is, what do I ask for?
Sure. Great question. So a couple of things on a more micro level are the price points that are the most popular, which may be surprising, or they may not be. They were surprising to me. The median price point on Rocket Hub and other crowdfunding platforms, for that matter, the median, remember from statistics class, is that single one price point that's the most popular, is $20.
Mm-hmm.
Which was really exciting whenever I was talking to folks in the music business at the New Music Seminar. I said, that's the single most popular price point on Rocket Hub by far, across the board, is $20. So what that means is, make your $20 price point really jump off the shelf. I mean, make it really exciting, make it really fun, because that's what you're going to move the most of, likely. Another very popular price point is the $100 price point, which I also found very intriguing. The $100 price point typically are folks that have built up a lot of trust, that have been following you a little bit longer. They may be inner circle folks, you know, your Uncle Bobby from Texas that loves everything that you do and buys 20 of your CDs every time they come out, but, you know, just loves the fact that he's got a nephew at making records.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's where he's probably going to land. You know, he's probably going to land at $100. You'd be surprised who lands there, but it's a very, very popular price point, is that $100 price point. As a result, the average contribution, it hovers day to day, but it's in about the upper 50s, $57 to $59 is the average across the board. So that's very interesting, because when we look at that average number, we could start to say, okay, well, if I want to hit $500, well, I need about 8 to 12 people
mm-hmm.
to really hit that number. Not a lot. To hit 1,000, you know, we call 500, by the way, like the intro level. Like, we have actually seen folks, you know, with a couple of blasts hit that number, you know, minimal effort, maximum return, $300, $500. Again, those are folks that do have some depth in their network and a solid track record, but the smaller price points are typically easier to hit. So taking that metric into account, you know, looking at $1,000 to $1,500 level, doesn't get a whole lot more difficult. You're looking at 25 to 35 people to jump in, not a whole heck of a lot. And as a result, you know, a lot of folks hit those goals. The $1,500 and under goal is another fairly easier price point to hit. You know, so I call the $500 level and under kind of your intro, and I call $500 to $1,500 kind of like the basic.
Mm-hmm.
And at the basic level, we have had artists that don't have computers, that just have like an iPhone, hit that. We've had artists that, you know, log on to the computer a couple times a week at the library and run their campaign. I mean, we've had folks that are not super tech savvy hit $1,500 and under. Again, they do have a network. They do have a lot of trust built up, and they're doing really cool stuff. So
yeah.
People are excited about the project. So I don't want to make it sound easier than it is, but just do know that there's a minimum effort, maximum return kind of at those price points or those goal amounts. Anything from $1,500 to $3,500, I kind of call the intermediate price point. So, again, you're going to kind of want, like, you know, you're going to have, you know, 50-ish, 60-ish people at those price points, maybe a few more if you're, you know, looking at that closer to $4,000 level. And typically you want to be pretty strategic at this point. So you don't want to kill, you know, to bombard your network before running a campaign with other stuff. You know, you want to kind of, you know, have them fully charged, if you will, going into a crowdfunding campaign, so you can kind of, you know, motivate them appropriately. If you just did a big show, or you just had a big showcase, or you just asked them for money recently, probably not a great idea to run a crowdfunding campaign right after an event like that.
Mm-hmm.
And you're looking to raise, you know, $3,000, $4,000, $5,000. You want to be strategic on when you're raising the funds too. So I hope that kind of helps in terms of, you know, gauging kind of where you are, what the effort is involved, and, you know, again, being kind of thoughtful in the overall approach.
On a different crowdfunding site, there was a band that I saw that's local here in town, and it seemed like their goal was not in line with that kind of thought process of numbers. They just threw out a very high target goal that's, to me, you know, I'm not as familiar with their fan base, but kind of just having a general knowledge of their career thought was pretty out of line. And so it just seemed like it was just thrown out there randomly. Like, we'd like to get this amount. But having those numbers and you talking through it like that makes it a lot easier for someone to sit back and kind of judge exactly where they're probably at so they are successful.
Yeah, and once you launch and you're unsuccessful, it's a little hard to come back immediately. So you kind of have to take a little bit of a break and re-gauge and readjust. But hopefully, you know, if you run a campaign well, whether you fund or not, you learn a lot. And that's another thing that, like I mentioned before, we really want to demystify the process of crowdfunding. A lot of bands do exactly what your friend's band did, which was, you know, wouldn't it be nice to have X and throw it up there, and you see another band, it's like, well, they hit it. Well, every band relationship with their fans is different. So, you know, it becomes kind of like a golf game. Like, you're really, you know, you're really kind of tweaking your own approach to the campaign. And it's important to kind of not necessarily look at all the other projects going on. I mean, look at them for some guidance and support and some inspirado on rewards and that. But it's important, too, to kind of realize where you are on your current creative path and then ask for an appropriate amount, because your fans will know, too. I mean, if you're asking for a ridiculous amount of money, they're going to just kind of be like, I don't know if you're quite there yet. I mean, you know, it's tough. It's a tougher sell for them, too.
Yeah, and this brings us to a good point you made to me in a previous call that we had, where I asked you, why is it said that you only get the money if you reach the goal? And you made some very good points why that's the case and why it's actually beneficial to the whole process if that's the case.
Yeah, I mean, it keeps the integrity. We're a big a fan of the all-or-nothing model, and the reason why is for a couple reasons. Number one, it kind of maintains some integrity in terms of approaching the budget. Because if it's an all-or-nothing, if you know you have to work to hit that goal, it really makes you think about what you need to pull the project off, as opposed to just kind of dreaming ridiculously big pie-in-the-sky stuff. So, you know, having that goal in mind makes the creative really focus on the budget and what they accurately need to make that project happen. The second thing that it does is it allows for viability, you know, allows you to test viability. So, you know, if you're looking to raise $5,000 and make a record with a cool producer in your hometown or whatnot, and you only raise $100, and then you take that person's, you know, those folks that contributed to your project, you take their money, what are they really putting that money towards? You're not doing the project, at least not right away. And, you know, it's kind of not really fair for the fans, because then they may not be getting what they signed up for, and they may not be getting it in a timely fashion, et cetera. So that's another reason why we're big fans of the all or nothing model. And it also, you know, tying again to the testing for viability from a creative standpoint, you know, if demand for the product's not there, then you don't have to make it. We have some folks want to make more of an ethnic record. I have a friend of mine that's very well known in the jazz scene here in New York City, and he's like, you know, I always wanted to make a really kind of ethnic folk record, but I don't know if my current fan base would support that. If I can raise the funds on Rocket Hub, cool, I'll raise the, you know, $3,000 or $4,000 to make the project, but I really don't want to sink that my own money into it, knowing I'm just going to have a box of CDs that nobody wants at the end of the day.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a great way to test viability and to build fans, you know, in the process of promoting it. Really, you're kind of promoting the project, selling the project, and giving them the opportunity to have an impact. And if none of that is happening, then, you know, it makes you kind of question, why are you doing the project in the first place?
Yeah, and I think when you explained it to me that way, it made perfect sense. And it seems like it's a way to set up artists and project creators into a better position for success, and also not only success for getting that particular project met, but for future success as well. Because if you kind of really blow it with your fan base on this one here, they're not going to come out and support the next one.
Yeah,
and you're kind of shooting yourself in the foot for future projects.
You're working backwards, which is not good.
Yeah, and so, yeah, I really, after having explained, because it really makes you stop and think, okay, and this is what, you know, for my band, really deciding, okay, where are we really at? You know, I know the product is going to be this, so I know asking within this price range is the people that support it are going to feel like they got their value out of it, but now where is our fan base to truly support it to make sure that, you know, we're not asking too much? And so you kind of really have to do some self-assessment there, which I think is good and artists don't do enough of.
Right. You know, and it's not an exact science either. I mean, you know, it's a pretty dynamic approach that one needs to take when putting together the campaign, and know that there's not a one-size-fits-all or a silver bullet to it. But the more homework that you put into it before you launch the campaign, and the more you figure out as a creative why the project's important, and the more time you spend on being really thoughtful with those rewards, usually the experience can be very, very beneficial.
Let's move into your third pillar, where you talked about rewards, and that's probably one of the most important pieces that probably gets overlooked. I think a lot of people just slap some stuff in there.
Yeah.
And looking at a bunch of different crowdfunding sites and things, it seemed like on Rocket Hub, like, you sent me some links to some good ones, and it was like, ah, yes, there is like some pieces that make sense. And
a good rewards menu should be a lot of fun. I mean, it should be fun to read. It should be fun to make up as an artist. I mean, the most successful artists on Rocket Hub has spent a lot of time on their rewards and really thinking about how they can contribute. I wish I could say this was my idea, but this was an artist on Rocket Hub that said, yeah, I wanted every reward to be like a present I would give somebody I'm crazy about.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, because I watch the projects that come on, and the ones that do well, of course, grab our attention. And I was like, wow, I need to reach out to this guy. He's really crushing it. And his rewards were really, really cool. And that's what it felt like when you're looking at, when you're reading them all, you're like, wow, I want this, and I want this, and I want this. And he really made it feel like you know the person, or you want to know this person, and every reward was something that he was giving somebody he was really crazy about. So a lot of musicians are kind of hit over the head with merch, right? T-shirts and, you know, the CDs and the posters, which are all very important still. In addition to that, the non stuff can be really, really powerful. You know, custom poems, or, you know, a special photography shots of you on tour and sent to somebody as a postcard. Experiences such as, you know, being able to name a track on the record, or, you know, play tambourine at a big arena show. People will pay money for those, and it's actually pretty fun to see where people fall in terms of those levels of impact, like I mentioned before. So the idea is to have those different price points and to really offer as much as you can outside of the world of music too. I mean, we had a great project. Janine Tirana was she's a singer-songwriter here in New York City, and she was on Rocket Hub earlier this year, and she really did some amazing things with her project because she has this passion, obviously, for singing and songwriting, and she was at a certain point in her career here. But she also had this passion for baking, and she loved, like, you know, really these really, you know, awesome cupcakes, and, you know, really decadent sweets. They're absolutely wonderful. So she started cross-pollinating for her Rocket Hub project this, you know, singer-songwriting and baking concept. And it went gangbusters, man. I mean, she was doing these 10 days of treats campaign where every morning she had a new video up on Rocket Hub, and she would be cooking something in the kitchen. She'd have her apron on real cute, talking about what she was going to be making. And she's like, and if you fill my record today, which is the terminology we use on Rocket Hub, you know, I'll be out at Central Park, and I'm going to have these brownies, and you can have a brownie and, you know, listen to some songs that are going to be on the record, and you know, I'll be out there for an hour today. And for the first day, she had a couple of people, her friends, and her people that were coming out. And then, like, people started taking pictures of it and spreading it around on, like, Flickr and Facebook, and by the end of her 10 days, she had folks all coming from out of the woodwork. And then she had radio shows calling her, wanting to have her on, but they weren't music shows; they were food shows. So then she had these fan base, you know, these kind of foodies in New York that became her fan base. She was able to really build her fan base significantly. She got from that radio show, she got invited to do a local TV show, and then from the local TV show, she was offered to play, you know, a swanky gig upstate. There's a whole new fan base there waiting for her. So I think that when you're really thoughtful and you expose kind of who you are as an artist and as a person with the project, that's often where you're most powerful. Because again, she's a great singer songwriter, phenomenal singer songwriter. But until she exposed that other side of her life, or other passion that she has of baking, that's when she really took a step up, you know, in terms of her music career, which has been a lot of fun to watch.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the very cool example, and I'm sure there's lots of people that are listening that are thinking, oh, if I just, you know, tie this aspect of myself into the music, it'll reach so many more people.
As long as it's authentic and fun and a part of who you are and what you're doing, it could be a really cool thing to cross-pollinate, you know, who you are as an artist and as a person with your music. And if you look at even the greats, you know, like Bob Marley, I mean, obviously, amazing singer, amazing songwriter, but he stood for something too. He stood for freedom. Mm-hmm. And when you stand for something and you have this kind of powerful, you know, value behind you, it really helps, you know, it helps kind of reinforce the music too, I think.
Mm-hmm.
So whenever people, you know, are saying, oh, you know, I'm putting on my Janine, you know, my baking CD and I'm listening to Janine as I'm baking these treats, like, that's kind of what she stands for. It's like, all right, this is a fun, like, baking CD, and it was a hit for us. It was really, really cool.
When you start putting in these rewards, it'll ask you, like, prize points and such. How many prize points do you think you need to have? I know you said, like, the $20 prize point is the most popular, and the average sometimes ends up being in around the 50s, but I mean, I've seen some people do, like, 5, 10, 15, 20, 25, or I've seen people do 10, 20, 50, 100, and I just didn't know... What's overkill? I mean,
So obviously, you know, you don't want to be too all over the place in terms of having too many rewards. But I typically tell folks to have some stuff in the small, which is, you know, $100 and under. Have a handful of things there. Have the probably that's where you want to have the most. Then have a couple of things in the medium, which is, you know, $250 to $1,000. So have like two or three things there. And then have, like, you know, one or two of the largest, $1,000 or maybe a $2,000 or maybe a $5,000, kind of depending on where you are in your creative track. I mean, we have had folks contribute $1,000 to projects. We have had folks contribute $5,000 to projects where the creative is very well established and,
mm-hmm.
You know, has a network that's, you know, really, really solid. I mean, for that particular project, they were just at, you know, winning another award at the Tribeca Film Festival. So,
yeah.
You know, so definitely kind of gauge where you are, but I would say have the most in the small, which is like under $100, a handful there. Have a couple in the medium, which is, you know, have a couple there, you know, 200, 500, 600, somewhere in there. Then have $1,000 or two,
mm-hmm.
You know, $1,000 or $2,000, you know, something there, just in case they hit. Knowing that the probability that those hit is very, very low for the large, but it, you know, you just never know. It only takes one of those to make a huge difference and turbocharge your campaign. So
yeah.
You want to, as a general rule, have a couple of those there.
So what are some of the cool ideas that you've seen artists do as far as, like, the rewards?
Well, the rewards get really cool whenever you get to know the artists behind the project,
mm-hmm.
obviously. So cool projects and, you know, rewards that have done well are... you know, CDs with poems, you know, CDs with handwritten lyric sheets or hand-signed pieces of music for the jazz artists that have been on Rocket Hub. Anything that is kind of, you know, touched or signed or, in, you know, intimate, for lack of a better word, authentic feeling, something you can't buy, does really well. This is not a retail experience where stuff shows up all shrink-wrapped. You know, this is an experience where things are custom and things are feel really touchable and exciting whenever they show up at your doorstep. Some of my favorite rewards have included from Dave Stevens, who's a notable puppeteer and banjo in Atlanta. He did, for $20, you got a CD and a cool little doodle. And you could throw out an idea for the doodle. And my wife and I were like, we would love a doodle of our dog. We have a little wiener dog named Bongo. Like, wouldn't it be cool to have a little doodle for $20 in the CD? So we fueled his project for that price point, and we were just blown away by this cool doodle with like a crayon, and it was just really cool. And we're gonna frame it. It's gonna be like in our, you know, it's in our apartment, and it's a really cool little keepsake that I imagine we're gonna have with us for a very long time. Other cool rewards are things where you can kind of do stuff with the artist, you know, like go to a show, get tickets to a show, tickets to a show that's kind of more exclusive or fun. I mean, people will pay. I paid $100 for kind of a premiere type show, and it was just a lot of fun. Great night, and, you know, all access to kind of, you know, the space that we were in, and kind of all the folks that fuel, all the fans kind of had full run of the spot for the night. Mm-hmm. You know, really cool venue here in New York. So that was really fun. So in terms of other specifics, the surf lesson, although I only had one person who was a stranger, by the way, take that. Got a lot of hype in the blogs and stuff. So, you know, a great kind of brand builder for me as an artist.
Mm-hmm.
The surf lesson kind of went over well. Any kind of like Janine's cooking lessons went over really, really well. And sometimes the artists do a dinner party where they'll kind of prepare the food for you and then play music afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
That consistently does well. That just project for project, that idea of coming over to an intimate setting like a house concert or an apartment concert in New York and having just a nice meal that was prepared by the artist or, you know, with the artist, and then a show afterwards does really, really well. And that typically does well at like a $75, $100, $125 price point.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, it doesn't take many of those to hit, to have a cool party, and then, you know, B, you know, hit your financial goal. And it becomes a really special, fun night for all those involved. You know, the ukulele lessons or guitar lessons or songwriting lessons are great. And anything that offers the ability for the fans to contribute, naming a character in a song, those kinds of things typically are catching and generate a little bit of buzz for folks. We have one guy coming on now. I'm not sure if he's going to do it or not, but he's like a well-known Canadian artist, and his wife's pregnant, and he's thinking about, like, at a certain price point, like, you get to put a name on the short list for the baby name. And I said, I think you'll get a lot of buzz for that.
It's
exactly what he's hoping on. So his project's coming later this summer. But, you know, the sky's the limit. I mean, you know, you want the rewards to be really exciting, and hopefully those ideas trigger, you know, your own rewards. And like I said, the food stuff is typically across the board a big hit. So keep that in mind, musicians. If you have any culinary chops, you know, offer that up to your fans. You know, do a bowl of gumbo or, you know, do some baked goods, because, you know, at least here in New York, that goes a long way.
Yeah. I was thinking about possibly being one of them, you know, like a house concert, private house concert for somebody who pays like $500 or more, something that where you can show up and just have that, you know, intimate experience and...
Mm-hmm.
Well, the main thing I wanted to get from you still was just some of the things that you need to have prepared in order to put together the campaign on Rocket Hub. I know we've mentioned video, or it's come up several times, but we haven't specifically stated. Do you have to have a video, or is it something that...
You don't have to have a video. Great question. You don't have to have a video to launch a project on Rocket Hub. We strongly suggest it. More projects, you know, fund with videos than without. The video, it should be, you know, short, typically under, you know, 2 or 3 minutes. It doesn't have to be an elaborate production. Actually, we found that simple productions of just, you know, a flip phone or a computer, you know, computer phone, sorry, a flip cam or a computer camera do really well in terms of, you know, just capturing a quick message so they can see the person behind the project, mm-hmm. you know. Updating them is a lot of fun, too. So the videos give you a chance to kind of update the project and update people on how the project is doing and how you're doing. If you can thank people. So people get really creative with the videos and have a lot of fun with it. We've had videos with puppets. We've had videos with, like, stop motion. You know, those are fun, too. But you don't have to go gangbusters with the production value. Just make sure that it's, you know, that it's fun and you know, engaging, and people can see you.
So that information, like the video, you can change as the campaign goes on. You're not locked into the video once you start the
Correct.
Campaign.
Correct. You can edit the video every day, as Janine did with her campaign. You know, she did a new video every day for 10 days, showing the different treats she was going to make for everybody in the morning, and then she would actually have that treat in the afternoon, you know, at the park.
Mm-hmm.
And it got to where my wife, first thing in the morning, she would wake up to see what Janine was making every morning. She would just sponge her butt.
Yeah. But the things you can't change are your goal and your
rewards once they're taken, right? So that makes sense. You don't want to change the goal. You can't change the time frame, the amount of time you're looking to hit the goal. And you can't change the rewards after they're taken, which makes sense if you think about it.
Yeah.
The other things to have is a nice beefy project description, just, you know, providing folks, you know, information on what the funds are going to go towards, you know, why this project's important. And, you know, maybe an MP3 would be good to have on the site as well. A few images that kind of showcase you and the project are good to have. And again, the most, you know, the most thoughtful of the elements really is the rewards.
Well, cool. Should people just head over to rockethub.com to find out more about setting up a project and getting going?
Absolutely. Rockethub.com. They can take a look at projects that are currently going, take a look at successful projects. Also at Rocket Hub, the full team here is very accessible. We pride ourselves on being very accessible. Your email, you know, every email that comes in gets a personal email from us back. You know, and we're here to help creatives make things happen and educate them on how best to run campaigns. So I hope that folks take advantage of our accessibility. We really enjoy speaking with creatives and helping them, you know, brainstorm if possible or if necessary, and helping them get the most out of the experience.
A couple questions I did forget to ask was, one, do you accept all projects, or is there a vetting process? Because I know some of the crowdfunding places do decide what gets picked and what doesn't.
Right. So at Rocket Hub, we're an open platform and we're global. So we accept projects around the world, and we, as long as they're legal and in good taste, you're free to launch. So there's no application process. There's no submission process. You basically log on to rockethub.com, click launch a project, and it walks you through all the elements that you need to upload. And you upload those elements, and you're good to go.
And finally, what percentage do you guys take, or is there some sort of payment involved?
Yes, great question. So our incentives are completely aligned with the creatives that are on the site, which means we don't make money if the creatives don't make money. So we only if the project hits 100% or more, then we take a small percent out of the back end of that project, total of 8%. 3.5% covers our transactional cost, and the other 4.5% goes to the site. So it's a total of 8% that comes out of the back end.
Okay. Well, thank you for taking time to come on the podcast. I think that's going to help a lot of people see the potential there and really formulate their campaign and have some success, as opposed to just trying to go in without much information, slap something up and fail, and then potentially alienate their fan base, but also feel like failures and not try again.
Right. Yeah. I mean, yeah, it's a new concept, and with the right strategy, you can definitely increase the probabilities of success.
Well, thank you, Brian. And
yeah, it's been a pleasure. Thanks so much. I've always been a big fan of the show, so it's exciting to be here. I'm really grateful for the opportunity. So thank you so much.
You're welcome. Well, that's going to do it for this episode. Have you tried a fan-funded campaign? Did you have success? Did you have any pointers to share with artists who are interested in doing the same thing? And I'm kind of curious what service you may have used. I'd love to get your feedback, and there are several ways in which you can do so. One is our listener line at 206-426-5683, or email at info@cdbabypodcast.com, or you can weigh in over at the comments section for this episode at cdbabypodcast.com. And of course, your 100th podcast episode shout-outs are welcome as well, so we'll be looking for those, and we'll catch you next time. Bye. You've been listening to the CD Baby DIY Musician Podcast, broadcasting from Portland, Oregon, USA.